RCR with Paul Brennan. Reality Check Radio.
James Roguski is an author, researcher, activist, and natural health advocate. He specializes in researching highly complex issues and translating data into simple language that is easily understood to facilitate action. That's where I come in. I want to welcome James Roguski back to RCR. I think it's our third chat, James. Nice to have you back.
Well, I appreciate it. And, any opportunity to shed some light on that which they're trying to keep secret, I'm happy to do. So thanks for the opportunity to speak to the people that, pay attention to you.
This is like some kind of crazy soap opera now with, different episodes, different parts, almost different seasons. In fact, I'm thinking of that program Soap. You could almost have this wired into the storylines, the plots. It is getting a bit like that now, isn't it?
Well, you're taking words out of my mouth. I've actually said that many, many times. And if you take that analogy and keep going with it, they're doing some really bad acting, number one. And, it is a theatrical production. So you have to realize that there are actors that are playing their roles. And, they're not evil people deep down inside. They're just, doing what they're told to do. But also, like, if there was a series that you had not been watching, and then you start watching it in the middle, for a lot of people who are just learning about this now, you're like, what the heck is going on? I don't know who this is. I don't know what that means. It's confusing because, they've been doing this for 75 years. And, these negotiations have been going on for at least a couple of years. And so to come in and to get all the nuance and the players and the roles that they're playing takes a little while to catch up. But if you actually look at this like watching a TV show, I have found it to be very entertaining because it's also life and death. I mean, you're living it and they're making decisions that ultimately could affect your life. This is insanity. I'll try to get to the punchline. You presented me as somebody who takes complicated stuff and makes them simple. So let me give everybody the punchline right now. Right. There's a million details that you probably should, pay attention to. I've been doing that for a year and a half, but here's a couple of big picture things. They will not let us see the documents that they're negotiating. Y'all okay with that? Is everybody okay with that? You like a good secret? You like to have somebody surprise you at the end?
And why would that be?
Oh, they just have our, best interests at heart. And, they're trying to put together a beautiful surprise for us, like a birthday surprise party. And everybody's going to be so happy when you learn what they've, put together for you. No, I don't think so. So no. Number one, they're doing this all in secret. And today is Wednesday for you, I think Tuesday for me. But anyways, at the beginning of the week on October 2nd, Monday, Geneva time, they dropped a little bit of a bombshell. And this is, they had meetings all this week. They're still going on in regards to the amendments that they're discussing to potentially adopt next year. Different than a different set of amendments that were adopted in 2022. But they let out a bombshell. They said, well, we don't think we're going to make the deadline.
Oh. Okay.
So things are not necessarily going all super smooth, unless, this is another plot twist and it's all laid out the way it's supposed to be. But they flat out said, in the sense that, they all seem to be in agreement, that they're not going to come to an agreement by the mid-January deadline, because in terms of the amendments, they're obligated by Article 55 of the regulations to submit proposed amendments 4 months in advance of getting together at the assembly.
Okay.
Right.
Yeah.
So the timeline for the amendments is shorter. And so here it is, beginning of October. So they've got October, November, December, half of January. They're basically saying, we're not going to make it. But then they pull in their slippery little legal advisor to the secretariat to explain how those rules aren't really rules and they can just do something else.
Oh, okay.
And so man, does the plot get thick from time to time.
Well, I think I heard Elon Musk say in talking about how things turn out, you know, outcomes. And it was along the lines of usually it's the most entertaining outcome, you know, and not necessarily for the people involved, the characters, but for whoever's observing. I don't know. So and it is a movie technique, isn't it, to inject an urgency of time ticking away and deadline approaching and everything gets squeezed up. And will they make it? Will they defuse the bomb, you know, in time? Okay. So just remind for those who've come in, because our audience is growing all the time. Well, I say all this mean, as you say, it's huge, but encapsulate what this actually means if it goes the way they want.
First and foremost, I would say in many situations, many cases, whatever it is you think you know about what it is they're doing, you probably should erase the blackboard of your mind and start from scratch, because the propaganda is thick and heavy and the misinformation has been rampant and they keep changing documents. Okay. And so, you know, I've been studying this for a year and a half, and here's what I'm saying from my position. Okay. On one track, the amendments that they're negotiating, which were submitted on September 30th, a year ago. They kept them secret until mid-December. 94 nations submitted 197 pages with 300 plus amendments. Back in mid-December, it was made public. So we're talking pushing 10 months now. And we haven't seen an update of whatever they might have negotiated in the interim. So my approach to this is to say, I have no idea what they're negotiating. If I say anything about it, I'm basing it on really old information that most likely a good portion of it is a decoy.
Oh, okay? Yeah. Okay. Yeah.
Okay. Now, there are aspects of it that I very much am suspicious that they don't talk very much about, but it's what they want. And I have a little prop here. This is an old school vaccine passport. It has a little form, you know, that you fill out. This form is in Annex 6 of the International Health Regulations. Now, they haven't really been talking about it. They're supposed to be negotiating it this week, but they're all doing that in secret, so who knows? But they want to expand that dramatically, digitize it, give everybody a QR code, and make it so that you have to have a vaccine certificate, a testing certificate, a prophylaxis certificate, and a recovery certificate. Well, the short version of all of that is I think all of those certificates would just certify that you're compliant, because the things they call vaccines are not, and they don't work. So what does that certify? The tests that they use are fraudulent. They've got 97% false positive. So what does that certify? A prophylaxis certificate? I mean, you know, they apparently have drugs that have a little chip in them so that when they hit your stomach acid, they give off a beacon. So are they going to make you take some drug that they know you swallowed because it's recorded in some computer database somewhere? So you get a prophylaxis certificate? And a recovery certificate for an ailment that people keep getting over and over and over again, even more if they get the jab. What are all of these certificates other than just a practice run for, you know, a social credit score system that, oh, if you're compliant, then you get to live your life a little bit better than the next person? That's just all completely and totally bogus. So if that shows up... Well, here's the interesting part, right? Back in April, they published a document. They buried it under the one vaccine that's in this passport is yellow fever.
Yeah, I've had it myself.
They had a little paragraph about yellow fever, and they said, oh, it's in Report O in this other document. And I found it, and they said, well, we're busy building the Global Digital Health Certification Network. And if you type in Global Digital Health Certification Network and WHO, you'll see that they have a page where they're talking about all of the protocols and such that they're building out this software system. So, you know, a normal person would say, well, if you're going to negotiate something, you probably ought to agree to that and sign off on it and then build it. If you see somebody building something while they're pretending to be negotiating, do you need to be psychic to try to guess how those negotiations are going to ultimately shake out? Okay.
No.
So, you know, I think you asked me, I'm going to forget the question, you know, how do I think this is all going to shake out? They're going to try to implement a global digital health certification network to track and trace you and limit your ability to travel internationally based on how compliant you are.
Well, you could use it to, you know, to inhibit people's movement anywhere, couldn't you, actually? Just down road when you're at that level.
They're talking about, you know, an international system. And one of the reasons why they're doing that, and I can visualize this in my mind, I hope I can express it verbally, right? I'll use one example, and maybe people can extrapolate it to everywhere else.
Mm-hmm.
Months ago, Novak Djokovic, the tennis player, was not allowed to compete in the United States because at the time we were requiring not that our own people, but that any foreigner not coming through our southern border, anybody who was coming in, you know, the traditional, you know, lawful way, was not allowed in if they were not a citizen and not jabbed. So he was not allowed to come in. So with all of the constitutional protections, they don't apply to a foreign citizen.
Well, so that's why they were able to do that.
Right. And so if you expand that with like sort of a Venn diagram where every nation is a circle, they would set it up where the nation would not necessarily infringe upon the rights of their citizens, but they could infringe upon the rights of everybody else in the world.
Yeah.
And so if every nation does that, they could get away with it internally because, oh, we're not making our people do it.
Plausible deniability.
Right. And so it essentially would set up a situation where you're in planet lockdown. Your nation is not infringing on your rights, but every other nation is.
Yeah.
Okay. And so how you translate that into using that internally within your country, I think they're going to do that with the central bank digital currency.
Right.
You know, oh, your money's no good because you're not where you're supposed to be, kind of thing.
Yeah. And that system that we're talking about now geolocates you all the time, everywhere, boom, mm-hmm. boom. So if it's not, because, yeah, like you say, none of that's about health. It's ridiculous. It's 180, actually. So this is like the training wheels,
mm-hmm.
infrastructure and operational experience gained, training wheels for the entire sort of like, digital prison, some people call it, mm-hmm. which is global. And if there's a certain level of compliance there, hey, sweet, we know this is going to mm-hmm. work. Press mm-hmm. it ahead. The secrecy, yeah, this can they do they justify the secrecy? Do they give any, you know, like credible explanation as to why all this has to be secret, given, you know, how it could affect sovereignty and personal freedom and all of that? I mean, you'd think that they want to be as transparent as hell.
I'll give you a couple of answers that I can pretty much document. Somebody I know in the United Kingdom did a freedom of information request about, you know, getting these documents. And that request was rejected based on the whatever reason that the personal need to know was outweighed by the national security risk of basically damaging relationships with the other member nations. Okay. So it's not quite national security, but it's, you know, it's this weighing of your need to know is outweighed by the damage that the nation exposing this information would cause. And that's that's a legit excuse in many nations where they say, yeah, you got a right to know, but your right to know is less important than our right to keep it a secret, which is bogus, but that's what they give you. The other side from the WHO is the WHO will say something like, well, this is a member nation led process, and the member nations want to keep it a secret.
Okay, so if, yeah, all right, so it's not us. Okay.
And it kind of started with the first like public view of it. It just makes you wonder, right? The Chinese delegate at one point, and I think this was not about the amendments, but this was about the convention agreement negotiations. The Chinese delegate, when they were asking, you know, do we want everything to be public or do we want to keep this secret or whatever? The Chinese delegate spoke up and said, no, we want, you know, most of it to be behind closed doors. And who piped in support of the Chinese position, but the American ambassador. So, you know, when you see the American ambassador and the Chinese ambassador both opting for keeping it secret, you go, all right, there can't be good things going on here. There's got to be something strange happening.
Yeah, because at the same time, though, you know, there's some sort of arm wrestle over Taiwan, and you know, we can fight two wars at once, and all of that. Is that all BS?
Well, you know, Taiwan is one of the non-member nations. Okay, they're not allowed in even as an observer to this. Okay, and so to clarify some of this stuff, last year amendments were adopted. And I'm going to venture to guess that the vast majority of people listening are not really aware because the media doesn't talk about it. Maybe there's an exception, maybe, but searching my memory banks, I cannot, you know, really think of any politician on the planet who has spoken out and said that the amendments that were adopted last year should be rejected. Okay. Most people don't even know that it happened.
Yeah, that's and right.
The way it works hurts people's brains because most people want to believe, especially in the United States. I'll give you the United States perspective.
Yep.
The typical United States person living here will say something like, well, if they adopt these amendments, then they would have to get the advice and consent of 2/3 of the Senate. Otherwise, it won't be a treaty. Well, I agree that's how it should be. But back in 1969 and 2005, the international health regulations were first accepted and then amended. And the procedure within that agreement is that that's not how it works. If amendments are adopted, it's assumed that everybody's fine with that.
Right.
Unless the leader writes a letter to the WHO and for their nation rejects the amendment. Well, that is not how people think stuff works. They think, well, you guys are proposing something. We're going to have to vote on it. So we get a say, the Senate gets a say, our parliament gets a say.
No.
Let that go. That's not what happens. And so there's an 18-month period, kind of like if you purchase something online, you bought a shirt or a pair of shoes or a tool or something like that, and they go, hey, you got 30 days to return it. Well, on May 27th, 2022, all of the 194 nations delegates, they went to Geneva and they bought some amendments. And you've got 18 months to return them.
Yeah.
Well, we've gone 16 plus, right? There's a month and something left till December 1st. We can still reject them. But they have this structured that if parliamentary members and people and leaders and whatever, if they just procrastinate, if they just ignore it, if they just do nothing, it slides past that time period and then it's too late.
Okay. Yeah.
And so, you know, if you're at a wedding and somebody said, you know, anybody who opposes this matrimony, speak now or forever hold your peace. Oh,
yeah, that's the time. That's the moment if you miss it.
Okay. You know, now it makes for some great theater and everybody's upset with you when you do it. Okay. And so my hope is that the 11 nations who spoke up a couple of weeks ago against what the UN was trying to push through, they clearly have enough intelligent and well-informed people in their diplomatic corps to know the rules. And I have got my fingers crossed and I'm saying my prayers that I'm going to wake up sometime around December 2nd or 3rd, and I'll read some report that this, that, or the other leader of some nation did reject the amendments from last year, because they have the authority to do that. And then everybody else who didn't, is, you know, should look and feel a little bit stupid. Because if you had a whole group of people, and it's kind of like a game of chicken. I don't know if that translates to New Zealand, but
yeah, it does. Yep, for sure.
If everybody's afraid to do something, and then at the last minute, some people take advantage and follow the rules and get themselves a better position, the ones who don't do it for whatever reason are going to look and feel stupid.
Yeah, it might fall into place.
Right. And so
FOMO. Yeah.
We shall see. But, you know, most of the national leaders are going to be afraid to stick their head up for fear of getting pounded down. And, you know, just going to, doing nothing is easy.
Yeah, but what has a leader got to lose? In their home country, nothing, I would imagine. I mean, if there's ignorance about this in the first place, no one's really going to know what that means anyway. Is it your standing amongst, your peer world leaders, or your moving and shaking
I would honestly say their life. I mean, there have been a number of leaders who've pushed back against the jabs.
Oh, okay, boy, all right, okay.
They're no longer on the planet, okay? And so there are many nations, and, you know, the nations that...
So fear.
Fear and, you know, the fear of being courageous and standing for what you believe in when, you know, you're going to get the wrath of people
which
who want you to go
wrath.
Along.
Yeah,
it could be the ultimate wrath. And so on one level, this is a minor little skirmish, because what the amendments do is shorten the time period for the next round to be rejected. Currently, there's 18 months, but the changes that they made would shorten it down to 10. And so it's really the stupidest amendment imaginable, because if something important needed to be changed in the regulations, if you wanted to make that change, you could just do it quicker. But by making it be that you have to do it quicker, now we're only going to have 10 months to consider 300 amendments, where we've already wasted 16 months and nobody's even talked about the 5 amendments that were adopted last year. Well, you know, you can look them over quickly, have that discussion, be done with it in a month and a half.
Unless you're wanting to run out the clock.
Right. And so the amendments that were adopted that can be rejected are just asinine. They're just absolutely a stupid change. And if a leader cannot support his own nation's flexibility, right, and would allow themselves to be locked in to hurry, right, you got to make a decision on this, this is a wonderful test case to see who's got the courage to just go, well, you know, I'm going to reserve the right for our nation to have a longer period of time to consider these 300 changes that you're making. You know, if we think it's important, we can agree to it like that. We can have that discussion. We can make it happen, right? Why in the world would you make it mandatory to not give yourself the space and time if you need it? And so, you know, it's a game of chicken. It's just a power play. It's ridiculous. That's not going to save anybody's life. That's not going to make anybody healthier. It's just a head game. We're going to see who's winning the psych war.
The plot twist you've just been referring to just before, the 11 nations who have rejected these. We were talking about them yesterday in another chat with another person, but you hardly the bastions of, you know, individual freedom, these places, yet they're the ones kind of doing the right thing in this case, some would say anyway. How do we explain that?
I'll give a take on it. And I don't know if I'm going to be able to remember them all off the top of my head. But Belarus, Bolivia, Cuba, Estonia, Zimbabwe, Venezuela, Iran, Korea.
North Korea, yeah.
North Korea, Russia, Syria, and I think I maybe forgot one.
Yeah, it's pretty good recall.
Nations that relatively have strong leaders who pretty much don't have that much more to lose from the international globalist community because they're already outcast, okay? And the point, just so everybody's straight on it, this was in the United Nations. On the very last day, very similar situation, you know, here we're talking about December 1st, they were starting these negotiations in the UN on the 18th of September. And so on the 17th of September, all of these nations sent a letter, which means they had to be talking about it for quite some time in advance, right?
Yeah.
But they dropped it. They dropped it at the last minute and said, no, we don't agree to this. Whatever you're doing is just theater. This has to be done properly at a full meeting of the General Assembly, right? And so at the last minute, they just dropped a letter. They knew the rules and they exercised their rights under the rules. So, you know, I want to believe that they have people who are intelligent and well-informed enough. Mm-hmm. They know the rules with the amendments to the international health regulations. Now, they could have tipped their hat, you know, months ago and said, oh, no, we reject those, right? But then everybody would be yelling at them.
So they held out right to the last opportunity.
They held out right to the last opportunity. And so here in the United States, the end of November, generally most Americans watch a lot of football and eat way too much. And and we spend the end of November in a food coma, right? So, you know.
It's well known.
What's going to happen? What's going to happen is maybe some of these nations at the last moment, the end of November sometime, they're just going to flip the bird to the WHO and go, nah, not for us. You suckers can have to have a limited amount of time to consider these amendments, but we're going to keep that 18-month period. Thank you very much.
Yeah.
Why wouldn't you do that? That's the only reasonable thing to do unless you're playing some weird psychological.
Unless you're all in.
Unless you're all in.
But it does point to that. That group of countries kind of tells you something. Because they are so, you know, opposite.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they know who they're, you know, you talk about the globalists. They know who their globalist enemies are. Because they've been dealing with them for so long, right?
Exactly. And there only Russia was in what I'm about to say. But, you know, just as a thought exercise, okay, what if you wake up one morning and you get the news from wherever you get the news, and the BRICS nations have announced that they're creating the BHO, the BRICS Health Organization.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
And all nations are invited to join their
health. Then you've got an arm wrestle going.
And now I'm not saying that would be better because, you know, maybe they're the ones who were designated to take over the world. I don't know. Right.
Yeah. Yeah.
But, you know, like that, the world can change. Okay.
Okay.
And so, those nations are not in the BRICS. You know, they're really sort of the old Soviet communist alliance, you know, nations, that kind of thing. But clearly they know how to work together.
Yeah. And they know who their common adversaries. Yeah,
and they know which side their bread is buttered on, is, you know, the other saying around here. They support those who support them.
This architecture that you've been describing, mm-hmm. Is also a way to manage, like you say, the relationships between countries as well. Because you can exclude a country, can't you? You can basically cut it off completely from any activity outside its own borders. And, so you could destroy an economy just like that.
And I was about to say monetarily. Someone else asked me a detailed question, and I ended up doing a screen share with them and going down into the rabbit hole of documents that were published back in April, all the financials of the WHO. And they list all of the assessed payments that the nations are obligated to make. And the one that stuck in my memory was the Central African Republic. Mm. You know, I guess a relatively small economy. Their assessed payments are based on the size of their economy. Their dues for membership in the World Health Organization was $4,750.
Right.
That's a pretty inexpensive price to pay to be a member of the WHO, especially if you've got one vote, the same number of votes as the United States or yeah. China or India or Brazil or the UK.
So contributing right? tens or hundreds of millions.
You've got one vote. You only have to pay $5,000. What if participating in this game gets you a multiple $10 million contract to build some biological laboratory?
You buy in the opportunity. Yeah.
You want my vote? Make sure that contract comes here and I get to pick whatever I need to pick to make all my buddies happy.
Yeah. Okay. Though I'm quite happy to throw our citizenry kind of under the bus because we'll impose these.
We're making a bunch of homegrown jabs or a homegrown pharmacy or, protective equipment or whatever. Aren't we wonderful negotiators? For $5,000, we got $50 million. Okay?
Yeah.
And so what if the BRICS nations realize that, hey, you guys are getting paid in whatever. We've got gold.
Hmm.
Okay? Or, whatever.
It's a better deal.
It may very well be that the WHO, this is meant to be a bad joke, okay? But almost 2 years ago, the United States, actually more than 2 years ago, the United States started negotiations for a World Bank operated pandemic fund.
Hmm.
And about a year ago, they announced it. And in December of last year, the Congress passed the National Defense Authorization Act, basically our military, right? And part of what our military does is the global health security agenda.
Right.
In my mind, they don't say this, but in my mind, I hear biological warfare.
Yeah, well, how could it be anything else if the military is involved?
Okay. And so in that, they pledged $1 billion a year into the pandemic fund run by the World Bank. And earlier this year, hundreds of millions of dollars were dispersed to various nations. There was a whole bunch of Caribbean nations, that got tons of money, essentially to start building biological labs.
Gosh.
And you go, oh, yeah, that's going to make everybody so much more healthy, right? So the bad joke from all of this is, they've figured out how they can convince, the United States and other nations are donating into the World Bank Fund. They can have, they meaning not the WHO, right? But this collection of nations and organizations and foundations, they go, well, let's just convince our governments to throw money into this fund. Our buddies at the World Bank will disperse all the money. And then they'll build whatever infrastructure wherever they choose to build it. Okay. So what you're dealing with are people who want to get paid to play. And so I honestly think that the WHO has fund envy because they're dealing with a form of money flowing in that they can't really control. Okay. When they get donations, they come with strings, and whoever the donor is, the donor says, here's how you're going to spend the money. Well, they want to be in the position to have the money go into a fund that they control.
Yeah.
And if you really look through all of this, that's what it really is. It's a venture capital investment pandemic profiteering, trying to make a cabal of oligarchs who have a cartel to oversee looking for pathogens with pandemic potential so they can bring them into a laboratory network and turn them into drugs and jabs and make money off of it and force people to do things to their body that, you know, aren't really necessarily good for them.
And I think so, you call it the pharmaceutical hospital emergency industrial complex.
I did that on purpose. I woke up one morning and it was right in my brain, because the other fake, P-H-E-I-C, according to the International Health Regulations, Tedros, whenever he wants, can declare a public health emergency of international concern. So same acronym, pharmaceutical hospital emergency industrial complex. It's all fake. They don't want anybody to be healthier. If you're healthy, they don't make any money. They want you to always be tested, to always be swallowing a poison, to always be injecting something that doesn't make you healthier. It actually wrecks your immune system, you know, causes a multitude of adverse events. That's their business model. It's not about health. It's about health treatment, because they get paid when you're ill.
That's so evil. I'm sorry, but that really is. And you said that at the start, though, I'm sure they're nice people. Well, maybe they are. Well, some layers are. But fundamentally, that's as bad as it gets, isn't it?
You know, if you can think of something worse, please don't tell me, right? I don't want to know. This is as bad as it needs to get. And, you know, I've been aware of this for maybe half my life, but I haven't been to a medical doctor since I was 19. And wow. I attribute my generally good health to the fact that I don't go to a doctor and I don't swallow poison and I don't let people inject strange things into my body, right? And your body has natural ability to heal if you understand nutrition and herbs and food and, you know, psychology and thought and energy and posture and, you know, toxins and all that sort of thing. Your job is to keep yourself healthy. The more you go to a doctor who puts a hypnotic trance into your mind, oh, you've got this disease and there's nothing you can do. You've got to swallow this poison forever because there's no cure.
You will.
Well, you know, you're going to believe it. You're going to fall for it. And that's how their system generates a financial gain for them. And question I ask everybody who will listen, if you're healthy, other than you and your family, who profits? Nobody. And so when you're ill, or you think you're ill, or you're worried that you might be ill, their system will take advantage of you. You know,
that's the waking up. When people say waking up, that's surely the waking up. Maybe it's happening that needs to happen, just as you described, when you realize suddenly that you can untether from that and kind of stand on your own in that way. That's fundamentally the waking up that needs to happen, doesn't it? Because then it makes everything we're talking about just look so fake, as you say.
And so,
are you seeing that? Are you seeing that?
Well, you know, for some people, okay, if you use the analogy of if you're fast asleep and somebody bursts into your room where you're sleeping and they shake you and they wake you up and your first thought, you don't know what's going on. People tend to, you know, why are you waking me up? I was comfortable here sleeping. You're raising them out of their area where they're nice and comfortable, okay? Well, you know, if there's some catastrophe on the horizon and they're trying to save your life, you quickly come to your senses and you go, oh, you know, thank you so much. Let's get out of here. But if they woke you up, you know, for some ridiculous reason, right, you would be mad at them. And so people who are sleeping from a, you know, analogy, just they don't want to know. It's painful to learn that you've been bamboozled.
Yeah.
But if you're truly of the mindset that you want to learn the truth, you shouldn't be mad at the person who awakens you to the truth. You should be mad at the people who've been lying to you the whole darn time.
Yeah.
But the anger is being directed at people who are, even if you're wrong, right? If you're speaking your truth, you honestly believe and you're trying to help somebody, they're generally angry because they don't want to admit that they might have been lied to.
Yeah. And, yeah, because then you've got to reflect on your own self, and that's not easy to do.
Yeah, looking in the mirror thing, that's hard.
Ooh, yeah. All right. So to sum up then quickly, everything we've talked about, what's the timeline now? And okay, if we're thinking of it as, you know, play acts and episodes and series and everything, what do you think the next bit of this will be?
Well, for this particular issue, if you go to stoptheamendments.com, I actually wrote, I don't know if it translates again to New Zealand, but there's a booklet series that people use when they're going to school called Cliff Notes. And okay. So it's just a summary booklet of the 200 pages of amendments and the 100 pages of the review committee. I got it boiled down to, I think, like 18 pages. There's a people's guide to the amendments. And the main thing is what they're not talking about. You know, they're not talking about all of the craziness that happened over the last 4 years. They're just wanting to add in more money to do more of the same. So don't do a search for that. That is the domain. Just go to stoptheamendments.com and you'll see, you know, pretty much what's going on with the amendments. And, you know, around the world, exitthewho.org. I've worked with several dozen groups around the world who are, you know, saying, look, this relationship has gone sour. I don't think the WHO is ever going to be reformed.
Yeah. Get out, bail out. Yeah.
Get out, get out. Yeah. And so I give my phone number to everybody as well. And obviously people in New Zealand, you can use Signal or Telegram or WhatsApp or, you know, send me a text message or something. It's in the US. So I think the country code is +1.
Yep. It is.
310-619-3055. If you have any questions, you know, love to get connected with people everywhere. I'm optimistic because they're not meeting their deadline.
I was going to ask you that.
Yeah, they're starting to cheat. They, you know, they've had to come in with a new version of the convention agreement. Bottom line is each individual person has to deal with the people that are in their life. Odds are really good that I'm never going to come face to face with Tedros Ghebreyesus.
Yeah, though you never know. But yeah, I think
you're going to come face to face with the people in your life. So reach out to them and, you know, gently give them a nudge and go, did you wake up yet? Yeah. Now would be a good day to start waking up.
Yeah.
And if they want to remain asleep, okay. The only thing that really scares me, you know, I got a big forehead. There might be a brain, you know, behind there. And, you know, they say that's what zombies want. So, you know, I know I'm a target for, you know, just crazy, you know, brain-eating zombies. But, you know, if you wake people up and let them use their own thinking, show them the information, if they want to go back to sleep, just go try to wake somebody else up. You know, give it the old college try. Share some information with some other human being. Share this video with everybody you can. And some people will get it and they'll thank you. And they'll go, oh, I had no idea, right? And some people just don't want to hear it. That's okay. Identify people who are still able to think for themselves and work with the willing.
Yeah. You just reminded me, here we had lockdowns and there was the QR code with the vaccine pass to get in, like nationally. I know you had states doing that, but it was national here around the country. And you could see, and this is speaking to your point about, you know, people waking up and rejecting this kind of this master plan, is that they kind of enjoyed taking the app on their phone, that, you know, that they could they could connect with something on a door or a wall, which would give them a green tick, a positive feedback, if you will, to do the right things, was like a socially responsible citizen. You know, people bought into that. Because it kind of made, even though it's a terrible thing, it made them feel good. This is why I have a little bit of pessimism in the back of my mind here. That, and it's a numbers game in the end. That in that situation, we saw a majority of the citizens kind of buy into that and feel quite happy and confident and outwardly proud of themselves for being part of. They felt like they're part of something. Mm-hmm. I don't know.
Yeah. And the opposite of that is, you know, the movement to shame people for complying with something that actually has been shown to be harmful, right? All those certificates are is a certification that you're compliant because the certificate is fraudulent. Right. It's, you know, the irony is so amazing. They literally refer to this network as a trust network. Okay. they want nations to be able to believe that, you know, people are not creating a fraudulent vaccine certificate so that if it's in this network and it's authorized by the government, it can be trusted by wherever you might be traveling.
Yeah.
But then you go all the way down. If you look at any computer system, there's a fundamental idea with data, you know, garbage in, garbage out. Well, the certificate that you've been injected with a toxic substance that damages your immune system increases the risk of getting the ailment that you're supposedly being treated for and does not stop transmission. In a sane world, if you had one of those certificates, you should not be allowed to travel because you're more of a hazard than if you didn't get.
If it was about that, yeah.
Okay. Yeah. And so it really should be viewed as, you know, a point of shame. You're still believing that? You got to be kidding me.
Yeah.
But
it's just our
society is going to deal with this. However, each individual area does. But at this point in time, if you're still asleep to that information, wow. Mm. Wow. You know, can I help you, brother? Right. Yeah. You know, there's so much that you've just and so, you know, if you can envision somebody on a beach with their head buried in the sand, okay, you could just leave them there or you could just come up because they're going to get their a nice swift kick in the butt by somebody because they're just not paying attention.
Yeah, they won't see it coming. Yeah.
They won't see it coming. And so I'm optimistic though that I think more people are pulling their heads out of the sand than are seeking to rebury their head. You know, once you know, it's really hard to not know. And unfortunately, there's a lot of excess deaths in the crowd of people, you know, the cohort of people who have been believers.
Yeah, and that's becoming more obvious to them, surely.
Their numbers are dropping, our numbers are rising. Yeah. And you don't need everybody. I just think they're gonna try to do, you know, they're gonna do what they're gonna do. They're gonna build their systems, they're gonna build their laboratories, but you know, more and more people are gonna get better connected. And you know, on the most simplistic point of view, the answer is no, right? I have my rights. I have my freedoms. You do whatever you want to do, but you don't have authority to tell me that I have to do something because quite frankly, if you're wearing a mask and you got your jab, then you should be just fine. Why are you worried about me?
Hmm. It's always been the elephant in the room, that one. All right. Yep. Good to catch up with you again, James. And of course, jamesroguski.substack.com if you want to read his material there. And did you put the open letter that you've written on the Substack?
There's been a whole bunch of open letters.
Okay, well, the latest one.
But the open letter to leaders around the world, absolutely. And you can also go to thepeoplesdeclaration.com. thepeoplesdeclaration.com. And it's basically saying, why aren't you folks negotiating an end to gain of function research?
Yeah.
Whatever it is you're doing, stop
There's
it.
That too, yeah.
Okay.
Stop it. Yeah, exactly.
Let's go in the other direction. Okay. More laboratories and more gain of function doesn't seem like a wise choice if you want to stop the next pandemic from leaking out of a lab.
Which they keep talking about.
Yep.
The next one, as if they know.
The next one's going to be unexpected. You know, I mean, it's a theatrical production. You have to expect a plot twist.
And it'd have to be more freaky than the last one to... Yeah.
We shall see. So.
James Roguski, thanks for coming on our radio station again. Nice to chat with you again. Thanks for the update. And I'm sure it won't be the last. I'm pretty sure.
Thank you very much.
RCR with Paul Brennan. Reality Check Radio.